नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो वेलकम बैक, थैंक यू वेरी मच फॉर joining the discussion again. So this is the 20th session that we are having. So 20 consecutive weeks, actually we did not cancel even a single week. So thank you very much for attending. Even though the vehicle is going quite slow, but I hope it's agreeable to at least most of you. So we have been discussing, we started discussing from the second verse of Manasriksha from last week. So we will just chant the verse once. Na dharmam na dharmam shruti gana niruktam kila kuru braje radha krishna prachura paricharyam iha tanu शचि सोनुम नंदीश्वर पति सुतत्वे गुरुवरम मुकुंद प्रेष्टत्वे स्मर परमजस्रम ननुमना। सो वी सॉ द मीनिंग, आई विल जस्ट क्विकली गो ओवर द मीनिंग। सो ही सेज न धर्मम कुरु न अधर्मम कुरु श्रुतिगण निरुक्तम। माय डियर माइंड, डोंट परफॉर्म the dharmic activities that have been recommended in the shastras, and don't perform the adharmic activities which have been rejected by the shastras. So then how do I maintain my living? He says vraje radha krishna prachura paricharyam iha tanu. Engage, stay in vraja and perform profuse service to radha and krishna. And then he says that then what is the role of worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu if my goal of life is to worship Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan? He says, Shachi Sunum Nandishwara Pati Sutatve Smara Mana. He says, my dear mind, remember that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from the son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna. So therefore, worshipping him is as good as worshipping Radha, Krishna and Vrindavan. In fact, he is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. So Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. And what is the role of worshipping Guru? Guru should be worshipped because Guru Varam Mukunda Preshtatve Smaramana. Guru is the topmost intimate associate of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. So therefore, your chance of becoming an associate of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, or an opportunity to serve Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, is going to come through the Guru only. So in this way, he explains about what should be done, what should not be done, and what is the role of worship of Guru and what is the role of worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. So in this context only, we started discussing last time. I will do a brief recap of what we saw last time. We discussed about what does it mean when he says na dharmam kuru na adharmam kuru, don't do dharma, don't do adharma. What is this? What exactly is he talking about? So in order to understand this, we went to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to understand what Srila Rupa Goswami recommends Vaidhi Sadhakas. So what are the duties expected of a qualified Vaidhi Sadhaka? So one who is practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, what are the duties expected of him? Okay. So in this context, we saw that if everyone in the name of accepting Bhakti do not perform their duties of Varna and Ashrama, then isn't there a problem? Because the Shastras do say that anyone who neglects to perform his Varnashram duties is actually committing sinful activities. So on one side we are trying to practice bhakti, and on the other side, because of our neglect of varnashram duties, we are actually accruing sinful reactions. So will we progress, or should we try to perform some atonements or karmakandiya prayaschitta to overcome these things? So this is where we discussed. Srila Rupa Goswami says, ananushtanato dosho bhaktiyanganam prajayate na karmanam akaranat esha bhakti adhikarinam nishiddha acharato daivat prayaschittam tu na uchitam iti vaishnava shastranam rahasyam tadvidam matam. So we saw last time where Srila Rupa Goswami says, actually I'm recapping what we did last time, hope that's why I'm going little fast. So those of you who did not join last time and did not get an opportunity to hear the recording, you might find it little fast, but I'm going little fast because we already covered this part last time. Okay, so please forgive me for rushing. So he says, esha bhakti adhikarinam. Bhakti adhikarinam means the person qualified for bhakti. So already Srila Rupa Goswami has mentioned that the qualification for bhakti is shraddha, adav shraddha. One who has that faith, Krishna bhakti kaile sarva karma krita hoy, that just by practice of the navada bhakti, I can achieve all perfection. One who has that faith, he is qualified for practicing bhakti. So such a person who is qualified for practicing bhakti, he is at fault for failing to perform the essential limbs of bhakti. We saw the essential limbs of bhakti are the first 20 limbs and the last 5 limbs are essential limbs, non-negotiable limbs. They have to be performed. But na karmana makarnat, he is not at fault for failing to perform the duties of varna and ashrama. If he fails to perform the duties of varna and ashrama, it is not a fault, he says. If by chance, nishiddha acharato daivat, if by chance he commits a forbidden activity due to influence of past vasanas, past sinful habits, or due to some Vaishnava aparad, if he commits some forbidden activity, he says, prayaschittam tu na uchitam. He should not be trying to atone for that sin by performing some prayaschitta, karmakandiya activities. Like we discussed last time, you should not go to ask an astrologer who may suggest that, you pacify this Rahu, pacify this Ketu, or perform some Kala Sarpa Dosha, or whatever, Narayana Nagabali, like that. There are so many kinds of things that they may suggest. Srila Rupa Goswami is very clear and categorical here. He says that no, this is not meant for devotees. Devotees should not be do these kind of atonements. Vaishnava Shastranam Rahasyam Tadvidam Matam. This is the opinion of those who know the secret of Vaishnava scriptures. Okay, so to summarize, it is a fault if those qualified for bhakti fail to perform the required angas of bhakti, such as observance of Ekadashi or Janmashtami, but it is not a fault if they do not perform Varnashram activities. If by chance they commit a forbidden activity, then they need not perform any atonements or prayaschitta. Bhakti alone actually acts as atonement. This is the conclusion of Vaishnava scriptures. Okay. Then, then we started discussing what does it mean to not perform Varnashram duties. So Varnashram duties, one does not perform means what? Does it mean that a devotee is irresponsible or ungrateful? What does it mean? Then we saw, did Arjuna really follow the instruction of Sarvadharma and Parityajya? Because apparently, he did not give up his duties of Varna and Ashrama. Because even though Krishna did say, give up all duties, give up all dharma, He did fight the battlefield after the rendition of Bhagavad Gita, and which means he did perform his Varna Dharma of Kshatriya Dharma, and he did take care of his family and all, which means he did perform his Ashrama Dharma, which is Grihastha Dharma. So did he really follow the instruction Sarvadharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja? So, or was it a clarion call for a change of paradigm? So what is the change of paradigm we discussed last time? In this context, we discussed this verse, second verse of Manasiksha also, where he says, Na dharmam kuru, na adharmam kuru. So basically, we saw last time that there are three classes of people. The materialist, actually, there can be many subdivisions in here, but I am just for ease purpose, for simplicity purpose, I just made three basic classifications. There could be a karmi or a materialist. There could be a karma yogi who is qualified, who has karma nishta. And there is a bhakti yogi who has bhakti nishta or qualification for bhakti. So a materialist, see, ultimately the nature of mind is to accept and reject things. A materialist is trained to accept and reject things based on what he likes and what he dislikes. What he likes, he accepts. What he does not like, he rejects. Raga sankalpo dvesha varjanam. And the pramana for this is whatever his past experience. Then we saw the karma yogi who has karma nishta or who is qualified for karma on the basis of dharma shastras, which say that according to your varna and ashrama, this is dharma and this is adharma. This is dharma and this is adharma. Like that it defines. So his basis of acceptance and rejection of particular duties, activities, etc. is based on what the dharma shastras say as being dharmic or adharmic. So he is on the platform of dharma and adharma. So what dharmasya sankalpo, adharmasya varjanam. Whatever is dharma he accepts, whatever is adharma he rejects. And then we also saw, but a bhakti yogi actually accepts and rejects thing based on the understanding of bhakti anukulyasya sankalpo, bhakti pratikulyasya varjanam. Whatever is favorable for bhakti, he accepts. And whatever is unfavorable for bhakti, he rejects. Okay. So these are the, and this he does based on the bhakti shastras. So the bhakti shastras are Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vaishnava explanations of, Bhagavad Gita, like that. These are all bhakti shastras. Bhakti Rasamrit, Sindhu is bhakti shastra, Upadeshamrit, like that. So if you see, we saw this Venn diagram, you have the Varnashrama circle and Bhakti circle. So the Varnashrama person who has qualified for, who is the second person, Karma Yogi, he acts in the mood of Dharmasya Sankalpo, Adharmasya Varjanam. Accept whatever is Dharma according to my Varna and Ashrama, he will accept. Whatever is Adharma according to Dharma Shastra, he will reject it. And the person who is practicing Bhakti Yoga, he will accept and reject things based on the recommendations and prohibitions of the Bhakti Shastra. Whatever is favorable for his Bhakti, he will accept. Whatever is unfavorable for Bhakti, he may reject. And generally speaking, when it comes to activities, actually, there are many activities which may overlap, which a person under Karma Nishta may also do, a person under Bhakti Nishta may also do. For example, eating. A devotee also eats, and a dharmic person also eats. Bathing. A devotee also bathes, a dharmic person also bathes. So similarly, taking care of children. A devotee also takes care of children, and a dharmic person also takes care of children. So it is based, but so it's not in the activities, it is in the sense of in what mood that activity is being carried out. And we also saw that in fact there could be an overlap of three, all the three, a materialistic person, a person following varnashram, and a person following bhakti. So we saw the example of Kalayavan and Bhurishravas and Arjuna. So Kalayavan is not a Kshatriya, but still he fights on the battlefield not as an act of bhakti, and not even as an act of dharma, because as a Yavana king, as a Yavana, it is not his dharma also. So he is just fighting because he sees he can get some wealth or whatever, power, whatever. So his consideration is based on raga dvesha. Whereas so a dharmic king like Bhurishravas, he may fight in the mood of, oh, this is my Kshatriya dharma and I have been requested by Duryodhana, so I have to fight. And this is a dharmic battle, it is my dharma to fight. And similarly, Arjuna also, he fought the battlefield. One may say that his fighting is because he was a Kshatriya, but actually he didn't fight because he was a Kshatriya. He fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. As an act of pleasing Krishna, actually Arjuna fought. So therefore, it is not under the Varnashrama consideration. It is under the consideration of what is pleasing to Krishna, which means it is an act of bhakti. So the act itself does not define whether it is a Varnashrama act or a materialistic act or an act of devotional service. It is under in what mood one performs that act. So, and in fact, actually, if you see in reality, there is a significant number of activities which actually fall within the realm of both Varnashram and Bhakti. So, like for example, someone may say a devotee father and mother taking care of their child is their Varnashram duty. But it is not so. It is not necessarily so. Like I will give one example. There was one Mataji, a very senior counselor. But many, many years back, maybe this must have been in... their son must be about... early 30s, so this must have been about 27, 28 years back. That Mataji was cooking in the DT kitchen, and His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj actually came there, and he knew that the Mataji had a small son at home. So he came and he asked Mataji, "What are you doing here?" Mataji was shocked. Mataji said, "What would anyone do in DT kitchen?" He said, "Maharaj, I'm doing devotional service. I'm cooking for the deities." So Maharaj said, "From today, your service is changed. You just take care of your child. That is your devotional service. So from tomorrow, I don't want to see you in the kitchen here. You just have to be with your child. You take care of your child." So, our acharyas had a very broad understanding of what constitutes devotional service. We don't make this kind of artificial separation. Oh, this is a devotional activity, this is a Varnashram activity. It is not like that. So, the activity in itself does not decide whether it is an act of Varnashram or it is an act of bhakti, but it is with what mood that activity is performed. If it is performed as an act of pleasing Guru and Krishna, then it is an act of devotional service. If it is performed merely because, oh, it is my prescribed duty according to the Dharma Shastras, this is according to my Varna and Ashrama, it is my duty. If it is performed in that mood, then it is an act of Varnashram. So basically here Raghunath Das Goswami is telling that stop acting on the platform of, he said, dharma, this is adharma, like that, and start acting on the platform of what will please Guru and Krishna. So basically, he is not asking to give up any activity. He is just telling, start acting with a different consideration. That's what he is indicating here. So this is where we paused last time. So this is all I have done here is I have recapped what we have seen last time. But at this point, I will pause for a few minutes to see if there is any quick comments, questions, discussions based on the recap. So that if all, just to ensure that all of us are on the same page before we move on further to discuss further. So, Vraj Radha Mataji, I am unmuting you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji,
Yes,
Dandavat
Mataji.
Pranam.
Dandavat.
Prabhuji, you said in the, that for committing, even if you are a devotee and if you are committing sinful activity, you need not lose the material atonement. Performing bhakti will neutralize it. So I was just thinking about Vaishnava Aparad. So suppose you are unintentionally done some Vaishnava Aparad in your mind and you do not want to reveal it to that person, then how should one atone for that Vaishnava Aparad?
Oh, that is a whole big topic. But for now, if we, you have to see, Mataji, if we have developed that offensive attitude towards that other person, and if you think that if I go and reveal it to that person, he or she may feel hurt. But if I don't reveal it, then they will not get hurt, they may not get to know. And if you are sure that through our facial expressions and through our bodily expressions and through our activities, if we have not communicated, if we have not given any non-verbal communication to the other person that actually I am carrying some negative feelings towards that person, then we don't have to go and I mean, this is my understanding, we don't have to necessarily go and tell him that, you know, I have had lot of negative feelings towards you, but we might as well you know, do some activity to please that devotee. That way when the devotee is pleased, we don't have to necessarily go out of our way and tell if like that. That's
because
what
revealing may disturb the relationship. That is
correct.
The reason that
But we don't have to reveal, but we have realized that, you know, it is not good to harbor such negative feelings. So we might try to do some act to please that devotee like that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
anything
you.
Yeah, anything else someone would like to ask before we move on with this topic further? Okay, so I don't see any hands up. So I think we will continue with this discussion. Okay, one hand is up. Aranya Vihari Prabhu, I am unmuting you, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
Can you hear me?
Your voice is breaking. I think your signal is probably weak. No, bro. I'm able to. You're talking that much we can understand, but what you're talking is not clear.
Okay, Prabhu. No problem. I'll mention my question on chat later.
No. Now we are able to hear you. You can please ask, bro.
Okay. Just continuing to Mataji's question regarding the atonement. So even in Bhagavatam, we see some episodes like Prisartha when accidentally he killed instead of a lion, he killed then he was given a kind of atonement by Vasishtha Muni. So what is that? How we can understand that it was not an atonement on the basis of dharma or adharma? It was basis on Krishna consciousness.
No,
so how we can understand
any,
that? Because it seems it was
in his case. He just, it is mentioned in Bhagavatam that this is an episode of Prishadra. I think I have mentioned this once before. So Prishadra is taking care of all the cows, and on one dark night a tiger attacks. So because he could not see, he follows the sound, and thinking that he was killing the tiger, he killed the cow. So it is already a gohatya sin. And on top of that, his guru Vashishta curses him to take birth as a shudra. But Prishadra continues to perform devotional service nicely, and at the end of it, he attains the spiritual world. That is what is mentioned. So it is not mentioned that he performed any specific karmakandi atonement or anything like that. That is not mentioned in Shivan. Is that okay, Prabhu? Aranya Vihari Prabhu? Aranya Vihari Prabhu? You can unmute yourself and speak.
Okay. Vashishtha Muni caused him to be a shudra. That is a kind of a torment to him.
He cursed him. It was a curse, but that curse did not act on him because he practiced pure devotional service. That is the story.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Okay. A few more hands up here. Rangaraj Krishna Prabhu, I am unmuting you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandat Pranam. Prabhuji, as you mentioned, like in Arjuna fought because he was doing a pure devotional service acts. But when I read Mahabharata, according to my understanding, every time the whatever the Arjuna did or other Pandava did, like before the war also, like getting weapon, he worshipped various demigods, and after doing Sradurat ceremony to various he was doing Sradh for everyone except for Karna, that episode comes. So is he doing devotional service considering Krishna to be supreme, or he considers Krishna to be supreme, but he did all that in the mood of a devotee, or he did some in a Varnasram system, or just to teach us a common public he did this? So I'm a little confused regarding that.
Okay, thank you for the question, Prabhu. Actually, this is a very important point that Prabhuji has raised. Actually, every book has a particular audience. So I probably discussed on this theme one of the previous discussions. So every book has a particular audience. So Mahabharat, especially the current version of Mahabharat that we have, is Vaishampayana's Mahabharat. So Vaishampayana's version of Mahabharat is which Vyasadeva has compiled, is actually a book which is meant for not persons with faith in pure devotional service, but it is meant for those who have faith in dharma or varnashram dharma. So therefore, whenever a pure devotional book like Srimad Bhagavatam presents a particular character portrayal, like the example of Parikshit Maharaj, or even the Pandavas for that matter. So because Bhagavatam is meant for pure devotees, the message that is given is, even though such people may seemingly act in a particular way which may not sometimes even be dharmic, but such people, by worship of Krishna, they attained the spiritual world. Like, for example, the character portrayal of Bhishma Dev. In Bhagavatam, if you see, the message that is given is, even though he sided with Duryodhana, but that is not focus at all. The focus of that whole episode of Bhishma Dev in Bhagavatam is, even though he is lying on the bed of arrows, Krishna personally comes to give him farewell party at on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and then he makes Bhishma Dev give essential advice to Yudhishthir Maharaj. Even though Krishna himself could not convince Yudhishthir Maharaj, he makes Bhishma Dev convince Yudhishthir Maharaj. And on top of that, the beautiful prayers expressing the deep love of Bhishma Dev towards Krishna, and how he offers those prayers and in the presence of Krishna leaves his body. That is the portrayal of Bhishma Dev's character, which brings out his deep devotional sentiments. But when Mahabharata presents that same story of Bhishma Dev, because it is a book that is meant for people who have faith in Varnashram Dharma. So it talks on the platform of Dharma and Adharma. So the purpose is to encourage people to act in dharmic ways and discourage them from acting in adharmic ways. So therefore, in that book, the focus is not on Bhishma Dev the devotee, because the Bhishma Dev the pure devotee, because the audience are not capable enough to understand that narrative. So the narrative that is given there is, even though Bhishma Dev was a great warrior, because he sided with Adharma, even he had to die a painful death. Okay, he had to lie on the bed of arrows, such an uncomfortable situation, and he had to die a painful death. So this is the narrative of Mahabharata. And also, if you see, Mahabharata talks about Pandavas for performing some acts of gambling and other such things, they at least briefly go to hell before they go to heaven. That is the narrative of Mahabharata. But actually, if you see in Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam's narrative is totally different. In the episode of Ajamil, when Yamaraj is speaking to Yamadutas, he says that Jihvana Vakti Bhagavad Gunanama Deyam Chetastana Smarati Tat Charanaravindam Krishnaya No Namati Tat Shira Ekadapi Tan Anayadvam Asato Akrita Vishnu Krityan. This is a famous verse spoken by Yamaraj to Yamadutas, where Yamaraj says, look Yamadutas, now I will tell you whom you should never bring to hell. He says, whoever has chanted the name of Krishna even once, whoever has offered obeisances to Krishna's lotus feet even once, and whose ears have heard the glories of Krishna even once, you can never bring them to hell, because they don't belong to hell. So if that is the case, that is why Ajamil could not come to hell. Ajamil was not allowed to come to hell. So now Pandavas, not once but throughout their lives, they had they were like Nityam Vishnu Janapriya. They were like eternally associates of Krishna. So, and throughout their lives, they were constantly chanting, hearing, and offering obeisances to Krishna. What is the chance that such people would go to hell? So it is not at all possible. So such a narrative is not given in Bhagavatam. But the glories of the pure holy name you will not find in Mahabharata, because it is not a book that is meant for practicing pure devotees. So the narrative of Bhagavatam is that even Pandavas, who are so dharmic throughout their life, for the performance of the sinful act of gambling, even they had to visit Naraka. So therefore, you should be very careful in your whole life. Always strive to act in a dharmic way. Never even once act in an adharmic way. So this is the narrative of Mahabharata. So we should understand the nature of that particular Shastra. So in Bhagavatam it is mentioned, Shraddham Bhagavate Shastre Anindam Anyatra Chapihi. So this is an instruction for the devotees. He says, devotees should have firm faith in reading and following the Bhakti Shastras like Srimad Bhagavatam. They should not read and follow the other Shastras, but they should not criticize other shastras also. You cannot criticize Mahabharat, or you cannot criticize the Dharma Shastras. You cannot criticize the Jnana Shastras. You should understand that these are bona fide shastras, but meant for some other people with some other qualification. But because by Krishna's mercy and devotee's mercy, I have received the qualification for bhakti, therefore I should be studying and earnestly trying to follow the bhakti shastras like Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, there are, I could give many, many examples, you know, the narrative of Mahabharata is very different. The narrative of Bhagavatam is very different because it is meant for a whole different class of people. So every literature, every Vedic literature, if you see, it is actually meant for a particular kind of audience. And those audience should read and try to follow that literature. So therefore, before reading any book, we should know what is that book meant for? Who is the audience? Is it meant for me or not? Like that. So that is my explanation for Rangaraj Krishna Prabhu's question. Prabhu, I'm unmuting you. You just let me know if it is relevant or not.
Puji, I understand what you explained, like this Shastra, but somehow in my heart, I'm not able to understand, like, so we read out the characters of a pure devotee to understand how they behave and how they don't behave. So mm-hmm. according to your explanation, sometimes they, so I just, my doubt was, what was Arjuna's mood? So as per your explanation, Arjuna's mood will be of Srimad Bhagavatam, but for general public or for dharma, those who follow dharma shastras, he acted in a way, and without explaining the mood of Arjuna, the so act was
external activity is mentioned,
was more focused in Mahabharata.
Okay, yes, please. Madhavi Gopi Mataji, I am unmuting you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Dandavat Prabhuji. Prabhuji, last time we had left one question that means we were talking about Varnashrama, and there you had mentioned that Varnashrama is on the intention what activities perform and not the external activity.
Correct.
I had asked that means when in Bhagavad Gita, Lord says that Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam. So there also Lord means this division on the intention it only, or the external activity also. So you had said that next time we'll discuss. I don't know whether it is going to come next. That is why I just reminded. If it is going to come, then you may skip the question.
The Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam, Krishna says, yes, I only created the Varnashram system. But that is for particular class of people who have that karma nishta, who have that qualification for karma. But devotees who are qualified for practicing devotional service can also choose to perform certain occupational duties based on their varna. That is not wrong, but that is not mandatory. Like, for example, I can tell confidently that at least 99% of devotees who are attending this call may not be performing an occupation which may be suitable to your varna. Or I can even say most of you don't even probably know what exactly your varna is. I mean, you may say that, oh, according to my caste, I am a Brahmana or I am a Vaishya and so on. But in reality, based on a check of our guna, you know, what is the percentage of sattva, rajas, tamas? You know, I am sure most of us would not have performed that particular test to check out what our varna could be. But it is not that, now we can never attain perfection in our practice of devotional service because our varna is not very clear. It is not like that. Yes, Krishna did create the varnashram. not for devotees like that. I mean, in the sense that devotees may choose to perform certain activities according to their varna if they know, but it is not absolutely mandatory that if they engage in an occupation which is not suitable to their varna, they cannot progress in devotional service. It is not like that. It may be favorable, but it is not mandatory like that. Is that okay, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji. So what I understood is, means whatever Krishna has said, it is those who are not devotees, for them the external following of Varnashram is mandatory. But those who have taken up to the devotion, for them that strictness is not there if they are performing the devotional activities properly.
Yeah, it is not absolutely mandatory. Like for example, your Varna may be something, but you may be expected to perform an activity, but your spiritual master might want you to perform a particular activity which may not exactly be according to your varna, but with a desire to please your spiritual master you may perform that activity which is against your varna. That's what we should do, because we should, at that time we cannot say that no, this is not according to my varna, I will not do it. Then it will become adharmic activity. It is not like that. That's the meaning. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean.
And we also say, no, Prabhuji, that in Kali Yuga, everybody is Shudra only. So, Varnashram means where we should find our Varna. Because if we say that everyone is Kalo Shudra Sambhava, so everybody is Shudra.
No, it is not exactly like that. It is a very generic presentation. It is a generalization. It is not like a very clear-cut statement that absolutely no one in Kali Yuga is actually Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya. It's not like that. It is a more generic presentation rather than very accurate presentation. That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
Nandarani Priya Mataji, I'm unmuting you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dandavat Pranam.
Dandavat.
Prabhuji, my question is regarding Vaishnav Aparad. So, Prabhuji, what is the right mood or, you know, way of asking for forgiveness if you feel you have hurt somebody? I mean, sometimes you don't feel fully sorry from the heart, and but you still know you have done an Aparad and it's affecting Bhakti. But then thinking that, oh, this is affecting my Bhakti is again a kind of selfishness. So,
That is good selfishness. At least that much we should definitely feel. But at least it's a good starting point, Mataji, because we cannot create emotions. But at least it's a good starting point that for me my bhakti is very dear. So at least for that reason I will go and beg for forgiveness. Slowly. On an organic basis, we can try to develop better mood.
Okay, Prabhuji. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Nila Manjari Mataji, I'm unmuting you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Mataji.
Prabhuji, two small questions. One is, you said different, like Mahabharata is meant for different and Srimad Bhagavatam for different. So different Shastras are different. Understood. But for our understanding, without being proud, we have to understand that Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimatum, no?
I mean, Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimate. Yes, you are right. But not everyone may be able to understand this.
No problem. But for our understanding, without having proud that we are following this path of pure devotional service and we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, without offending anyone, even though they may be reading any of the Shastras and following those Shastras or codes of morality. But we have to understand for ourselves that what I am following is 100% pure devotional service.
Yeah, that is not a mental adjustment. That is what has been established by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So that is the consistent presentation of Prabhupada. That is the consistent presentation of our Guru Parampara. And that is the consistent presentation of Bhagavatam also. So therefore, It is not like, oh, because I am born in a particular country, therefore that country has to be the best. It is not like that. This is actually reality in one sense.
So we are following the base, but we may, it should not create even a trace of pride in our heart. It's based because it is based. Not that.
Actually, we can see, Mataji, it is. There is no point in. If pride is there, it is there. Pride will not come due to, our studying Bhagavatam or considering ourselves to be qualified to study Bhagavatam. What you say is right. We should not become proud, but at the same time, we should know that this is the Shastra which can help us please Guru and Krishna. So for that reason, we are studying it, not to become proud. Not because it is the best Shastra, but because this is the Shastra which helps us understand how to please Guru and Krishna. Mm-hmm. Because that is our goal, so therefore we study this Shastra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is, it's like fortunately we have been allowed to come in this path.
Correct. So without, it is fortune only. We don't have any qualification.
Yeah, without comparing and judging. Okay, ठीक है मतलब it's not ठीक है ना भगवान ने मुझे यहाँ पे लाया तो it's nothing of my even little credit also does not go to me.
No, we cannot. If you understand how one gets devotional service, actually we will understand that we have nothing to feel proud of actually.
Right.
Because ultimately one gets devotional service. Purely 100% unalloyed mercy of another devotee, other devotees only. We don't have, we cannot take any credit for it. So it's not like if you have become the gold medalist in your college, then you can take credit because you have studied. But if you find a gold medal of someone else lying on the road and pick it up, you can feel happy about it. You can feel grateful about it. You cannot feel proud because we have not done anything to get it actually. So that way, one receives the seed of pure devotional service purely by mercy. Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. So the living entity has absolutely no real qualification that he receives that seed of devotion. It's not like if 100 lifetimes he has perfectly practiced karma, jnana or yoga or whatever it may be. Only such people will get bhakti. It is not like that. Anyone can get bhakti because it is purely by mercy. So therefore, we have no reason to become proud actually.
So what, just a small thing, like me and my cousin brother, we both are doctors now. And we both grew up together. I took ISKCON, I came in ISKCON path. And since our house was very next door to Radha Swami Satsang, which is a Mayavad philosophy, so he started going there. He also thought ki, arre, Sunita bhi kisi achhe kaam mein lag rahi hai, toh main bhi achhe kaam mein lagta hun. So now he is such a very staunch follower of Radha Swami. And he does so much a lot of free service, medical camps, and so much service he does there. But then what kind of emotions I should have for him? I got it, what you said, just free of cost by devotees' mercy. But sometimes I feel, yare, usko wo nahi mila. Hum dono saath mein bade hue. Somewhere this thought also comes ki I sometimes discuss with him. Try to come sometimes, but then I don't feel like disturbing his soul. He has so much great faith in that Radha Swami, and I don't feel like disturbing his faith also. Like the full family is going and serving Viram the heart.
You are right.
I'm sometimes fail to understand ki what emotions I should, when I meet him, what emotions I should have for him. I really respect him. And the respect the service attitude. But fir mujhe kabhi kabhi, I don't know how to put it.
Yeah, I understand, Mataji. So the emotion should be that he is so sincere. If only Krishna could attract him to his lotus feet, it would be so nice. So that should be our emotion. But in our action, we have to be very careful. He went there because definitely he has received affection from there. So if he receives affection from you, he may not necessarily take up to Krishna consciousness in this lifetime. But at least whenever he meets you, if he receives nice affection and if he appreciates you for that, then he will get some sukriti. And that sukriti may mature either in this lifetime or in next lifetime, and he may take up to Krishna consciousness. But that much we can try to be nice with him. That's all.
Yes. Prabhuji, if you don't mind, one small more thing.
Yeah.
What Mataji said about Vaishnava Pradhana, just the last question. If anything negative comes in my heart, for example, if a negative thought comes to my heart about you, I have to say you sorry, even if I don't utter it from my lips. Because mujhe lagta hai nahi maine aparad kar diya bas. So with very politely, I tell ki mere man mein thoda negative thought aaya, I am really sorry about that. But I go and confess to that person and say sorry. Till I don't do that, na, I cannot sleep at night. I have seen. So, is that wrong?
It's not wrong, Mataji, because I'm sure, see, people don't read into our words. People can read our genuine emotions. So, I mean, if you can, with this kind of emotion, when you go and express to that person, I'm sure the person will understand that you are genuine, and he or she will understand and appreciate. So it is not that you should go and tell or you should not go and tell. It's about how genuinely you feel for it. If you genuinely feel that you should go and tell, you go and tell, and the person will understand your genuine emotions. That's what I think.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so I think we should continue now. We will try to take more discussions little later. We will cover some portions, and then I think we will take up further discussions. Okay, because we have just recapped, and the recap Q&A has taken so long. So now we should try to understand what is the basis of Varnashram system. Okay, so if you see wherever in Bhagavatam or anywhere Varnashram is mentioned, we will take a few examples. For example, in the first canto, second chapter, very famous verse, Atapumbir Vijashreshta Varnashrama Vibhagashah Swanushtitasya Dharmasya Samsiddhir Haritoshanam. So he says, oh, best of the Brahmanas, the complete perfection of Dharma. So here Dharma means Varnashram Dharma. And then he further clarifies, Varnashrama Vibhagashah. Which Dharma? Varnashram Dharma. The complete perfection of Varnashram Dharma is pleasing the Lord. So ultimately, that the center of Varnashram system is pleasure of Vishnu. So without Vishnu worship, there is no Varnashram system actually. And also you see, Dharmaswanushtita Pumsam Vishvaksena Katasuyaha Na Utpadeya Yadiratim Shramayevahi Kevalam. So if by performing Varnashram Dharma, we do not get a taste for hearing Krishna Katha or performing some bhakti, then it is useless. Which means Varnashram without bhakti is useless. Or Varnashram without worship of Vishnu is useless. So, if you see this picture on your screen, okay, it has three concentric circles. And at the center of all these three circles is Vishnu worship. So, you can say this disc is called as Varnashram disc. Okay. The whole thing is called as Varnashram system. So now, at the center of this disc is Vishnu worship, worship of Vishnu. Okay, and the middlemost disc, the golden colored disc, is Shuddha Bhakti. Okay, so pure devotional service, which is where the person performs only activities which please Krishna. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Artham Archanam Mandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. Only that much. And the middle circle you see, that is the circle in which is mixed devotional service. It is primarily devotional service, but there is some small mixture of karma, jnana or yoga. So it is called as karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti or yoga mishra bhakti. It is bhakti, but there is little bit mixture of karma, jnana or yoga. And the outermost circle you see, that is called as in that circle there is karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga. So even karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, such people also, they should worship Vishnu, but that worship of Vishnu may be a very small element. Primarily they practice, the karma yogis practice varnashram, the jnana yogis practice their jnana yoga path, and the ashtanga yogis practice their ashtanga yoga path, but there should be a small element of bhakti in that. Okay, so this whole thing is the varnashram system. Now the question is, we say varnashram, but everyone should is it that everyone should practice varnashram duties? What do the shastras say? Do the shastras recommend that everyone within the varnashram system performs varnashram duties as prescribed in the dharma shastras? Because the dharma shastras only talk about varnashrama duties. The jnana shastras and bhakti shastras, they talk about the duties for a jnana yogi and duties for a bhakti yogi. They don't talk about varnashram duties. So varnashram duties are described only in the dharma shastras. So now we saw, this is the varnashram system, this is the varnashram disk. So all people, they fall within the varnashram system. So I am just trying, see, there is a difference between varnashram system and varnashram duties. Like for example, I will give you an example. Now let's say if there is a fire brigade, so if there is a team, if some building, let's say it catches fire, so then the fire brigade comes to extinguish that fire. Okay, so even though the whole team is called the fire brigade, they have come to extinguish the fire, but actually only one person is catching hold of the hose and showering that water to extinguish that fire. Rest all are doing different activities. They are not extinguishing the fire. If you have noticed, someone is rolling out that hose pipe, someone is driving that fire engine, someone is putting that ladder, someone is holding that ladder, and only one person has picked up the hose pipe and is trying to douse the fire. So even though the whole team is called fire brigade or fire extinguishing team, but only one person is engaged in actually extinguishing that fire. So similarly, in the Vedic system, when you say someone belongs to the Varnashram system, what it means is anyone who worships Vishnu falls within the Varnashram system. But that does not necessarily mean that anyone within the Varnashram system will actually perform Varnashram duties. So Varnashram duties are different. Okay, so varnashram duties means duties according to one's varna and ashrama as described in the dharma shastras. Okay, so now if you see, let's try to see what does, we will not go to any very esoteric shastras. Let's just take Bhagavad Gita. Okay, Bhagavad Gita is basic book, everyone reads Bhagavad Gita. Let's try to understand what Bhagavad Gita talks about, who should perform varnashram duties. Okay, what about a jnana yogi? So now, is a jnana yogi expected to perform varnashram duties? Because we are talking about everyone in this world should perform varnashram duties. Is it like that? What does Bhagavad Gita say? So what about a jnana yogi? So in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 17th verse, this verse, Krishna says, यस्तु आत्मरतिरेव स्यात् आत्मतृप्तश्च मानव आत्मन्येव हि संतुष्टस्तस्य कारणं विद्यते तस्य कार्यं न विद्यते. He says, यस्तु आत्मरति, सो वन हू इज अट्रैक्टेड टू द आत्मा विच इज द ज्ञान योगी, ही इज मेडिटेटिंग ऑन द आत्मा विद इन द हार्ट. आत्मतृप्त, हू इज सैटिस्फाइड विद द आत्मा. आत्मन्येव हि संतुष्टो एंड ही डस नॉट नीड एनीथिंग एल्स अदर देन द आत्मा टू बी सैटिस्फाइड. तस्य कार्यं न विद्यते, he has nothing to do in regard to fulfilling desires or he does not have to perform any varnashram duty. Tasya karyam here refers to varnashram duties. So a jnana yogi is not expected to perform varnashram duties. And then the very next verse says, naiva tasya kritenartho nakriteneha kaschana nachasya sarva bhuteshu kaschid artha vyapashrayah. He does not gain anything by performance of varnashram duty. So a karma yogi, a sakama karma yogi gains piety by performing varnashram duty. A nishkama karma yogi purifies his heart by performing varnashram duty. Whereas a jnana yogi, he does not gain anything by performing varnashram duty. And a sakama karma yogi or a nishkama karma yogi, by not performing varnashram duty, they commit sinful act. It is a sin. But a jnana yogi, if he does not perform varnashram duty, it is not a sin because he is not expected to perform. So, naiva tasya kritenartho nakriteneha kaschana. Neither does he gain anything by performance of varnashram duty, nor does he lose anything by not performing varnashram duty. So, this is for a jnana yogi. What about an ashtanga yogi? Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, Arurukshor muner yogam karma karanam uchyate. Yogarudasya tasyeva shamakaranam uchyate. So he says in the beginning stages of yoga, ashtanga yoga, one should perform his varnashram duties. But when one progresses to the later stages like dharana, dhyana, samadhi, where he is expected to just sit and meditate on the Lord within the heart, at that stage, one should give up his varnashram duties. That's what Bhagavad Gita says. So therefore, and what about a bhakti yogi? Is a bhakti yogi expected to perform varnashram duties? So we have to stick to shastras. What do the shastras say? Krishna clearly says, Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami mashuchaha. He says, giving up all dharmas, just surrender unto me alone. I will deliver you from all sins. Do not worry, Arjuna, like that. Okay. So in this way, if you see, the jnana yogi or a jnana mishra bhakta. So I am just again now going to that varnashram figure, that ring. So you see this ring. So the center ring is bhakti, shuddha bhakti. According to the shastras, according to Krishna, Krishna says sarvadharman parityajya, give it up. Okay. And then you see the orange part, you know, which karma yoga, sorry, the blue part, which is jnana yoga and jnana mishra bhakti. Both of that, Krishna has told, oh, if you are an atmarati, then, or if you are pursuing jnana yoga, oh, you need not perform varnashram duties. You don't gain anything by performing varnashram duties. You don't lose anything by giving up varnashram duties. And you see the green part, Ashtanga Yoga and Yoga Mishra Bhakti. These two, Krishna clearly says, in the early stage of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, in the early stage of Ashtanga Yoga, you perform your prescribed duties, you perform your Varnashram duties, but then when you become qualified to perform Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi, in the later stages, you should give it up, he says. And the centermost ring, that is Shuddha Bhakti ring, he says, give it up. Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Okay. So, therefore, even though all of them fall within the varnashram system, but not everyone in that varnashram system is expected to perform varnashram duty. Just like we saw the example of the fire brigade. The whole team is called fire brigade, but only one person is actually using that water hose to throw water on the fire and extinguish the fire. Only one is engaged in actually extinguishing the fire, but others are also doing duties. They also fall within the fire brigade like that. Now, the question is, first thing, we say that everyone should perform Varnashram, or we talk so much about the importance of Varnashram system or Varnashram duty. So what is the role of Varnashram prescribed duties? What do they do? What is the purpose of Varnashram prescribed duties? So the Shastras say, so I'm going to read the first thing I'm reading from the second verse of second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is a commentary by Baldev Vidya Bhushan. Okay, I'm reading second chapter, second verse, commentary by Baldev Vidya Bhushan. He says, the Lord explains that this renunciation of fighting does not lead to liberation, swarga, or fame. It is not practiced by those aspiring for liberation, because those who are Arya practice their designated duties for purification of heart. So, the Varnashram duties are performed by those who are Karma Yogis to purify their heart. And when their heart becomes purified, then they can practice Jnana Yoga to meditate on Brahman to achieve liberation. So this is the purpose. And then Srila Prabhupada's purport, third chapter, fourth verse. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada says, the renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified. So renounced order of life is Jnana Yoga. So sannyas is otherwise called as Jnana Yoga. So the renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties. So by performing Varnashram duties, when the heart becomes purified completely, then one can take up to Jnana Yoga, which is otherwise called as sannyas. Without purification, okay, so which he says in the previous line, I will complete the line. The renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties, which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. So that is the purpose of Varnashram duty, is to purify the heart. Without purification, one cannot attain success by abruptly adopting the fourth order of life. So one cannot directly take up to Jnana Yoga or sannyas without the heart becoming purified by practicing one's Varnashram duty. So the Shastras are very clear that the purpose of Varnashram duty is to purify the hearts of those who have Karma Nishta. Okay. Then Prabhupada also in 3.8 purport, he writes, work should not be given up capriciously without purification of materialistic propensities. So work here refers to Varnashram duty. So Varnashram duty should not be given up capriciously without purification of, capriciously means whimsically. One should not whimsically give up one's Varnashram duties without the heart being purified. Anyone who is in the material world is certainly possessed of the impure propensity for lording it over material nature, or in other words, for sense gratification. So everyone in this material world wants to engage in sense gratification. Such polluted propensities have to be cleared. Without doing so through prescribed duties, through Varnashram prescribed duties, one should never attempt to become a so-called transcendentalist, renouncing work and living at the cost of others. So this is what Prabhupada is also writing, that the purpose of Varnashram duty is to purify the heart. And again, 18.66 commentary by Baldev Vidya Bhushan. Again, I will skip this. Now, the question is, Are Prabhuji, if you say the purpose of Varnashram duties is to purify the heart, I am a sadhaka only. My heart is not pure. It still has impure desires. So I should also practice Varnashram duty, na? If I don't perform Varnashram duty, how will my heart be purified? Someone may ask. Because clearly the Shastras say, we read from Baldev Vidya Bhushan and we read from Prabhupada, they clearly say The purpose of practicing Varnashram duty is to purify the heart. So for sadhakas, their heart is impure. So how will their heart be, how will their heart become pure if they don't practice Varnashram duties? So for devotees, bhakti only purifies the heart. Okay, that is what we read in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also. Kleshagni. So Kleshagni means destruction of prarabdha karma, aprarabdha karma, and also destruction of sinful desires and sinful vasanas. So by practice of bhakti, all of this is destroyed. So therefore, for devotees, one should not say that for purification of the heart, one should practice Varnashram. But for progressing towards Krishna's lotus feet, one should practice bhakti. That is the wrong understanding actually. In bhakti, bhakti is capable of purifying and bhakti is capable of helping one attain the lotus feet of Krishna also. In Bhagavatam it is mentioned, Punantite Vishaya Vidushitashayam Vrajanti Tacharana Saroruhantikam. It is mentioned about the path of bhakti. So by practicing bhakti, a person with an impure heart, his heart will become purified. And for a person with pure heart, he will attain the lotus feet of Krishna. Like that. And also in the first verse of Shikshashtakam only we see Cheto Darpana Marjanam. The very first benefit of chanting the holy name is purification of the heart. The heart becomes purified of impure propensity to lord it over this material world. So therefore, one should not say that devotees should practice Varnashram duties to purify their heart, and they should practice bhakti for attaining the lotus feet of Krishna. This is not the right understanding. Okay. And also Krishna clearly says, Shipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat shantim nigacchati kaunteya pratijanehi name bhakta pranashyati. My dear Arjuna, you go and loudly proclaim that my devotee shall never perish, because even though some sinful inclinations may be there within his heart, I take responsibility to purify his heart. Like that Krishna says. So of course there is a very beautiful explanation of this verse, where someone may accuse Krishna that how can you accept the offering of a sinful person? He's offering patram pushpam phalam toyam, but his heart is contaminated by lust, anger, envy, greed. So how can you accept? So Krishna says very quickly he will become righteous. What's your problem? Okay. He will become righteous because he will feel genuinely repentant, and I will help purify his heart. Like that he says. Okay. Thus, with the entrance of bhakti in his mind, the sinful actions are not taken seriously, because the process has started to cleanse his sinful intentions. Like that. And the traces of sin such as lust and anger should be considered insignificant, like the biting of a toothless snake. Thus, he attains complete cessation of lust and anger permanently. So eventually, permanently it goes. But even during the stage of having the tendency to commit sin, he has a pure heart, because Krishna is working to purify it. And he himself is convinced that I am feeling lusty, I am feeling angry. This is not good for devotional service. And I will not be progressing if I hold on to these tendencies. He knows, and he feels repentant within his heart. Okay. Anyway, this is a long purport. I will just skip this purport. We will go to next section. So to summarize, we were seeing from Bhakti Rasam Sindhu. So to summarize, the duties expected of a Vaidhi Sadhaka, it is mentioned, he is at fault for failing to perform the essential angas of bhakti. So as Vaidhi Sadhakas, we should be very attentive to performing the essential limbs of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and the first 20 limbs. But we don't have to find out our Varna, and we don't have to read the Dharma Shastras, Manusmriti and everything, and exactly find out according to my Varna and Ashrama, what are the duties I need to perform. and then very painstakingly perform those activities that is not expected of devotees. And if due to our past sinful life, sinful inclinations, if we happen to commit some forbidden activity, we don't have to go to an astrologer to find out, you know, what are the prayaschitta I need to do. That is not needed. So then how will the sinful reactions go? Bhakti will take care. For such a person, bhakti alone acts as atonement. So this is a summary. So you will see some few verses which are quoted by Srila Rupa Goswami as proof. So one verse he quotes is, Sve sve adhikare ya nishta saguna parikirtitaha viparyayastu dosha syad ubayor esha nishchaya. So this is a famous verse from the 11th canto, 21st chapter, where he says that whatever may be your position, you perform activities which are prescribed according to your position. If you are a bhakti yogi, perform shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, padasevanam. That is good. To perform anything else is wrong. If you are a karma yogi, perform, find your varna, find your ashrama, perform, follow the dharma shastras and do whatever is dharma according to that. You do it, whatever is adharma, reject it. Okay. So basically, what is guna or the right thing? The right thing is when there is a match between adhikar and prescribed duty. And what is wrong? If there is a mismatch between the adhikar and prescribed duty. If a bhakti yogi performs the activity which are meant to be performed by a karma yogi, that is wrong. Similarly, if a karma yogi performs the activities which are meant for a jnana yogi, that is also wrong. Like that. Then another verse. Swapada moolam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hari pareshaha vikarma yachot patitam katanchit dhunoti sarvam hridisanyavishta. This verse says, for one who is completely dedicated to worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna, if somehow or other he performs a forbidden activity, the Supreme Lord who has entered his heart, he purifies the heart, which means he need not perform any karmakandi atonements to rectify that sin. Then another verse from the 11th canto. Tasman madbhakti yuktasya yogino vai madatmanah nagyanam nacha vairagyam prayashreyo bhavediha. Therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving devotional service, neither jnana nor vairagya is the means of attaining success. It is bhakti only. He should not be extraneously engaged in increasing his jnana, vairagya, etc. He should just perform bhakti and not focus on anything else. And so many other verses. Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadavva shraddha yavanna jayate. So this verse says, one should continue to perform prescribed duties or varnashram duties only till he develops faith in devotional service. Once he develops faith in devotional service, then he is not expected to perform his varnashram prescribed duties. And then so many verses. Tyaktva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer. This verse is there. Ajnaya eva gunam doshan. So these are famous verses. I will not go into the details. Another famous verse here, often misunderstood verse. Devarishi bhutapta ninam pitrunam nakinkaro nayam rinicha rajan sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam kato mukundam parihritya kartum. So he says that yata yaha gato mukundam sharanam, one who has taken shelter of Lord Mukunda, parihritya kartum, giving up all kinds of obligations, which means sarvadharman parityajya. And sarvatmana, and he has taken up to the path in all seriousness. In all seriousness here means jnana karmadi anavritam. He has taken shelter of only bhakti and he is not thinking that I should do little varnashram, little jnana, little yoga. He is not thinking like that. He has taken shelter of only bhakti. So that is why this verse is quoted here in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. If you say sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam means complete surrender, like the like the perfected devotee, Surupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, like that, then this verse need not be quoted in the section on Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. This should be quoted in Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. But this is quoted in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So such a person, he is not indebted to Deva, Rishi, Bhuta, Apta, Ninam, Pitrinam, etc. He is not indebted to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind or forefathers. None of them, he is not indebted to them. He is not indebted means, does not mean that he is an ungrateful person. What it means is that he need not be distracted thinking that I need to separately show my gratitude to Surya, I need to separately show my gratitude to Chandra, I get the sunlight because of which I have benefited. I need to separately worship Surya, separately worship Chandra. Just no need. Just water the root. Yatataror mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujopashaka. Just water the root. When the root gets the water, the flowers, fruits, leaves, everything gets the water. Like that. So therefore, it means the person, that person is no longer obliged to perform regular varnashram duties. Why? Because having surrendered to Krishna, that person has destroyed all prarabdha karmas and consequently destroys being situated in varnashram. Okay? So a person who has taken up the path of bhakti, he need not, be very seriously trying to find out what is varna is, what is ashrama is, and try to follow those varnashram duties. That is not needed. Just by practice of bhakti, it is taken care of. Like that. And then he quotes this verse, Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami maashuchaha. Very nice purport by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur here. So Arjuna, after hearing Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, he has heard this verse. This is the verse that comes before Sarvadharman Parityajya. Arjuna may ask, okay, I understand that I have to think of you, Krishna, Manmana. So Bhava Madbhakto and all these things. So am I supposed to perform the meditation and other processes along with my Varnashram duties or without my Varnashram duties? This is the question that Arjuna may ask. Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. These are the things which you are asking me to do. Along with this, should I also perform my Varnashram duties, right? Or should I not perform? So Krishna says, Sarvadharman Parityajya, giving up all duties of Varna and Ashrama, surrender only to me. Then I will just read some sections of this purport because otherwise it will take a long time to complete this. Okay. So he also quotes all these various verses to explain what is this Sarvadharman Parityajya means. The meaning of the word should thus be explained using all these statements of the Lord with no contradiction. The meaning can indeed be understood correctly by the prefix pari, which means completely. So which means completely one should give up all varnashram considerations, not necessarily varnashram duties, but varnashram considerations, which means the paradigm of dharma and adharma should be given up completely. And the paradigm of anukulyasa sankalpo pratikulyasa varjanam should be accepted completely. Okay. So, mam ekam sharanam vraja. You should surrender only to me. This means that there should be no worship of devatas. There should be no ashtanga yoga. There should be no jnana yoga or dharma or other elements in that surrender. And he says that, and don't think that by following my order, you should not fear that you will lose something by giving up your varnashram duties. He says, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. I will take care of all the sinful reactions that may come, like that he says. So of course, this is also a very long purport, but a very beautiful purport, but we don't have time. I have just mentioned the essence. And also Krishna has promised, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam Yajana Paryupasate Tesham Nityabhi Yuktanam Yoga Kshemam Vahamyaham. I will carry the burden of your supply and maintenance. You don't worry. So Krishna gives this guarantee. So you don't have to depend on your karma. Don't think that you have to perform your Varnashrama duties, and by performance of Varnashrama duties, you will gain some piety, and by that piety, you can take care of your supply and maintenance. You don't think like that. I will personally take care of your supply and maintenance. That's what Krishna says. Yoga Kshemam Vahamyaham. I will carry the burden of your supply and maintenance like that. Okay. Now, so at this point of time, I will again pause for a few minutes and then see if you have any discussions, comments, questions. We will take for a few minutes before I go to the last section of this presentation. So if you have any quick comments, questions, you can please raise your hands and I will unmute you. So is there any comments? Sangeeta Mataji, I am unmuting you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, Dhanavad.
Dhanavad, Mataji.
I wanted to know, when we talk about essential limbs of bhakti, out of the 9 processes, when we are performing a few of them like Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, would they be the essential duties, or there would you have to do all of them? So seva, of course, is included in that.
In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu,
yes,
while discussing the 64 limbs,
yes,
in Rupa Goswami says the first 20 and the last 5 are the essential limbs.
Okay. Yes, correct.
First 20 and last 5. These are the essential limbs.
One more question, Prabhu. You mentioned about steadiness. Now, how do we understand that a person is steady? Does it mean that the person is chanting and doing seva very nicely and constantly engaged in devotional service? Or I would like to understand this phrase word little better.
In what context, Madhya? I don't remember. I might have mentioned steadiness, but I forgot which context. Do you remember the context where?
You were mentioning, after you talked about the duties expected of a sadhana, then you mentioned about steadiness and you went a little quickly with the slides. And then you talked about perfection of life and then watering the lute and all that.
Okay, I will just check, Mataji. I don't exactly recollect, because based on the context, I will have to answer. Because steadiness could mean anything. Based on the context. So I will have to check the context and I will tell you, Mataji.
Yes.
Okay. Any other question? Anyone else?
That is it, Prabhu.
Okay. So if there are no further questions, I hope I didn't rush through this section too fast. I hope it was fairly okay. If something was not very clear also, you can ask, you can tell me this section too fast, I could not understand. I can go over it again if you feel. So, because I don't see any hands, I will move on to this last section of this presentation. So, now, all said and done, even though now we have seen again and again and again and again so many proofs, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Vishnu Jagadakur, Srila Balde Vidya Bhushan, Srila Prabhupada in purports, we have seen so many things, and it is very clear that for devotees, it is not necessary to practice the Varnashram duties. In fact, a devotee need not even know what is Varna is. There is no problem. He can still perfect his life by practicing devotional service. Now the question is, Srila Prabhupada did say that 50% of his mission is establishing Varnashram. How do we understand this? Is Prabhupada trying to contradict Rupa Goswami? Is he trying to contradict Srila Vishwanatha Thakur? Is he trying to contradict the scriptures? Is he trying to contradict Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam? How do we understand? So there, I mean, of course, this is one question which the whole ISKCON is trying to solve. So what exactly, what did Prabhupada mean by establishing Varnashram system? For whom, what, exit like, you know, you have to try to find out the Varna of all the devotees and try to engage them according to their Varna. Only then bhakti will be possible. Is it like that? What exactly does it mean? So it could mean many, many things. Few things that I could understand, I have presented here. I'm going to present now. But the point is, one thing we should clearly understand is whatever Prabhupada wanted to establish, we should understand that Prabhupada would not want to establish something while contradicting the essential bhakti shastras like Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. And he would not trying to establish something by contradicting the opinions of the acharyas who are coming in the Guru Shishya Parampara. So that much we should have firm faith that Prabhupada would not want to establish something which would be contradictory to the presentation of the Parampara and the Bhakti Shastras. So whatever Prabhupada may have meant, we should try to understand it only in this light. With this faith we should have. Okay. So now with that understanding, let us try to see what Prabhupada could have meant by mentioning that 50% of my mission is incomplete and that 50% is to establish Varnashram. What could Prabhupada have meant by this? Okay. So with that prelude, that Prabhupada, whatever he wanted to establish, would not be against the essential presentation of our Guru Shishya Parampara. With that understanding, we will try to understand. Option one, in my opinion, establishing Varnashram institution as a stepping stone for outsiders to take up to Shuddha Bhakti. Okay. So this could be one of the things. So if someone does not have faith in pure devotional service, at least if he is practicing Varnashram system, then he will at least live a sinless life. So which means his heart is will fairly be freed from Rajogun and Tamogun and the sinful vasanas and all that, because he is at least trying to regulate his life through the Varnashram duties. So that whenever a devotee comes and sows the seed of devotion within his heart, then immediately he takes up to practice of bhakti. And because he has practiced Varnashram till taking up to bhakti, his heart is already fairly clean of the sinful tendencies. Therefore, anartha nivritti happens very fast for such a person. Okay. So probably Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram institution as a stepping stone for the outsiders to take up to Shuddha Bhakti later, eventually. So Prabhupada in a morning walk. So this is February 9th, 1976, Mayapur. So I am reading the transcript of that morning walk conversation that happened. So in this particular section, Prabhupada is having a discussion with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So Prabhupada says, so I will read, you can see it on your screen also. Prabhupada says, no, ISKCON is not going to be social reformer. But as far as possible, we can help. Our main business is how to make everyone Krishna conscious. That is our business. We cannot take up, but if possible, we can take up all the system of Varnashram. This is what Prabhupada says. Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, oh, if Varnashram is neglected, then how can there be proper functioning of society? Srila Prabhupada says, no. If the society chants Hare Krishna seriously, then it is all right. Never mind whatever is done. It does not matter. Papi tapi jata chilo hariname uddarilo. This is the power of Hari Sankirtan. If one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, so all benefit is there. So long in the bodily concept of life, we require this Varnashram Dharma. Otherwise, there is no necessity. Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, yes. Then Prabhupada continues. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you have read in the 8th chapter Madhya Leela, talk between Ramananda Raya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So perfectional life, how it begins? This question was raised by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Raya replied, it begins with the Varnashram Dharma, regulated social life. Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, he rejected that. Prabhupada says, no, not rejected. Yes, it is not very important. Eho Bahya, this is external. Age Kaha Ar, if you know something more. So Prabhupada says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he did not reject Varnashram, but he said, this is external. You go little further, he says. So the Varnashram Dharma is a good help undoubtedly, but it is not important for Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, how could I start this movement in the Western country? Srila Prabhupada says. If Varnashram system was a prerequisite for starting bhakti, then how is it that I could have started this Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world where there is no question of any Varnashram Dharma? There was no Varnashram Dharma, but that did not hamper my movement. Now people are surprised how these people have become such great devotees. So it was not based on Varnashram Dharma. No, because the whole movement is spiritual. It starts from the spiritual platform. Aham Brahmasmi, Jivera Swarupoi Krishner Nityadas. Like that. Then Prabhupada continues. Samashritaye padapallava plavam mahat padam punya yasho murarehe bhavam budhir vatsapadam param padam. Now just like here is a gap. So they are walking and Prabhupada says, look, do you see here is a gap? So you can go by the bridge. And if you can jump over, that is also going. That is also going. He says that now there is a gap. If you are young, if you can, jump over it. You don't need a bridge. But if you cannot jump, then make a bridge and cross over. Like that Prabhupada is saying. So you can go by the bridge and if you can jump over, that is also going. So to become Krishna conscious means to jump over the spiritual platform immediately. And this Varnashram Dharma, Sannyas, Varnatyaga, Karmatyaga, these are different steps only. But if you become Krishna conscious seriously, then you jump over all these steps. You go immediately. That lift and the staircase. By staircase, you go step by step. By lift, you can go immediately faster. So Prabhupada here is explaining that yes, for those who are not qualified, for those who cannot directly take up to devotional service, it is okay. But for those who can, they can directly take up to devotional service. They don't have to go through the Varnashram system. That's what Prabhupada says. So this is the first option. Varnashram can be system. Prabhupada wanted to establish it for those outsiders who have not taken up to devotional service and who may not have sufficient sukriti to immediately take up to devotional service. For them, let them practice Varnashram and keep their hearts fairly clean till a devotee comes and sows the seed of devotional service in their heart. And when that happens, then they can give up that Varnashram duties and start practicing devotional duties. So this is the first option, Varnashram as an option for the non-devotees to gradually come to bhakti. Second option, accepting the Varnashram occupations in the mood of anukulyasya sankalpo as a viable alternative for the modern Ugra Karma lifestyle. Okay, so there are so many life, there is factories, the various factories, software, and so many other things are there, which are, as Prabhupada calls it, you know, some kind of Ugra Karma. So, but the Shastras talk about what Brahmanas do, Patan Patan, Yajan Yajan, Dana Pratigraha, what Vaishyas do, Krishi, Goraksha, Vanidjam, or what Shudras do, Paricharya, Yatmakam Karma. So these are occupations which is not at all Ugra Karma. So devotees can understand that why should I go and work 365 days a year, 12 hours a day to earn my livelihood. So let me take a simple lifestyle which is recommended by the Shastras, and by that I can save time and energy which I can utilize for practicing Krishna consciousness. So in this mode, Prabhupada talks about Varnashram in the 7th canto, 14th chapter purport, 10th verse purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, I am reading it for you. You can also take a look at your screen. So Prabhupada says, these are the different occupational duties by which men should earn their livelihood. And in this way, human society should be simple. At the present moment, however, everyone is engaged in technological advancement, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as Ugra Karma, extremely severe endeavor. This Ugra Karma is the cause of agitation within the human mind. Men are engaged in many sinful activities and becoming degraded by opening slaughterhouses, breweries, and cigarette factories, as well as nightclubs and other establishments for sense enjoyment. In this way, they are spoiling their lives. In all of these activities, of course, householders are involved. And therefore, it is advised here, with the use of the word api, that even though one is a householder, one should not engage himself in severe hardships. One's means of livelihood should be extremely simple. And for those who are not grihasthas, the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas and sannyasis, they don't have to do anything but strive for advancement in spiritual life. This means that 3/4 of the entire population should stop sense gratification and simply be engaged in advancement of Krishna consciousness. Only 1/4 of the population should be grihastha, and that should be according to the laws of restricted sense gratification. The grihasthas, vanaprasthas, brahmacharis and sannyasis should endeavor together with their total energy to become Krishna conscious. This type of civilization is called Daiva Varnashram. One of the objectives of the Krishna consciousness movement is to establish this Daiva Varnashram, but not to encourage so-called Varnashram without scientifically organized endeavor by human society. So Prabhupada is explaining here, why engage in Ugra Karma? There are so many occupational duties which are mentioned. So you can accept one of those which are based on simple living. So why don't you accept one of those occupational duty, give up this Ugra Karma lifestyle, so that you know your consciousness is more conducive for Krishna consciousness and you get more time to perform Krishna consciousness. So this is Prabhupada's suggestion in terms of certain occupational duties which are recommended for Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Shudra, which are not Ugra Karma. You can accept them, and that way you can escape the Ugra Karma lifestyle. So the second option, why Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram, could be accepting the Varnashram occupations in the mood of Anukulyasya Sankalpa. Oh, this is very anukul for my bhakti. Let me accept it. Like that. So as a viable alternative for the modern Ugra Karma lifestyle. So this could be the second reason Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram, meaning the simpler lifestyle, simple living and high thinking. Now, the third option. Why should the Krishna consciousness movement be restricted only to those who are Anyabhilashita Shunyam? So why should the Krishna consciousness movement be only for those who have no material desires? Why not? He said that when someone comes to, when someone says that, oh, I have a desire to become the richest man or a very rich man or a very good sportsman, is it like such a person should not be encouraged to worship Krishna? But as of now, if you see, you know, we preach Anyabhilashita Shunyam. So basically, our literatures are Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu only. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu starts with Anyabhilashita Shunyam or Bhagavatam, which also talks about pure devotional service. Now, what if a person does not have that level of Sukriti and he may be really lacking that Sukriti? And it may take many, many years or decades for him to accumulate that Sukriti and develop that pure devotional faith. So till then, should he not come near ISKCON at all? So let's see what Prabhupada says. So here if you see, only the golden disc in between, they are pure devotional service. They are practicing pure devotional service. But the rest of the people also should be incorporated. So, in this verse, Akama sarvakamo va mokshakama udaradihi tivrena bhakti yogena jeta purusham param. The person desiring destruction of all desires, akama or sarvakama or mokshakama, everyone should worship the Supreme Lord with pure bhakti. So now, Prabhupada in this purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. It is He only who can award liberation to the impersonalist by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahma Jyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the Supreme Brahma Jyoti must also worship the Supreme Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. The previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. So why should Bhakti be, why should the society of ISKCON be restricted only for those who are free from all kinds of material desires? Why not it be open for those who may have material desires, who may have desires for liberation? For such persons, they can come and through the path of Varnashram and gradually be a part of ISKCON. And by being a part of ISKCON, they will come in touch with practitioners of pure devotional service and slowly they will gain that Sukriti. And by that, they can take up to practice of pure devotional service. So in that stage, in that sense, bhakti varnashram can act as a stepping stone. But if you say, if you are Anyabhilashita Shunyam, you come. If not, then ISKCON is not for you. Then we will marginalize most of the world, actually. Most people will marginalize. But if we marginalize them, then how will they get the association of practitioners of pure devotional service and how they will take up to practice of pure devotional service? So therefore, we should have the outer ring also, where even if you may have material desires, you can come and gradually be associating with devotees. You can take up to pure devotional service. Like I remember once, you know, His Grace Gaurang Prabhu was sharing. So in one of the one of the boys who started coming to classes, he liked the philosophy, but his aim was he was a very good cricket player and he wanted to become a very successful cricket player and play cricket for India. But whichever devotee he met, so the devotee said, Prabhu, sorry to say, but you are in deep Maya. You know, all this cricket wicket, Esap Chodo, you know, this is all Maya. You should just practice Krishna consciousness. So they said, you choose between cricket or Krishna consciousness, cricket or Krishna, one of the two you choose, like that. So he felt very discouraged. He said, what can I do? Actually, I like Krishna so much, but I like cricket also so much. But if you say I have to choose either cricket or Krishna, then maybe I should choose cricket only. He was feeling very dejected because he didn't want to give up Krishna also. So one day he saw Gaurang Prabhu and he went to Gaurang Prabhu and he said, Prabhuji, actually I have a great desire to play cricket for India. So Gaurang Prabhu said, oh yeah, very good. You go and play cricket for Krishna, and you do very well. As Krishna's representative, you go and play cricket, no problem. He felt so happy and relieved. He said, you mean to say I don't have to choose between cricket and Krishna? Gaurang Prabhu said, no. You be a devotee and you play cricket, no problem. So he was so happy. So because he thought, like, I have to choose either between cricket and Krishna. So he started playing cricket nicely. And after some time, organically by, associating with devotees, hearing lecture, chanting. And I think Gaurang Prabhu also took some commitment that you should chant. You should start chanting also, chant so many rounds like that. So gradually by chanting, associating with devotees and hearing Krishna Katha, gradually he lost his interest in cricket and he became a Pakka devotee, got initiated and all that. So now, therefore, you know, of course, this is not exactly Varnashram, but something like that, you know, where a person is inclined to do particular things. He is not ready for practicing pure devotional service. A kind of system of Varnashram can absorb such people also and give them an opportunity to associate with practitioners of pure devotional service. Then gradually they can also become practitioners of pure devotional service. Like that. So this is like a small presentation that I had prepared for understanding what does it mean that devotees do not practice Varnashram duties and how do you reconcile it with Prabhupada's desire to establish Varnashram. So this brings us to the end of this presentation. We still have 5 minutes left. So if there are any quick comments, questions, discussions, you can please raise your hands. Maybe a few minutes we will discuss before we wind up for the day. Any quick comments, discussions, anyone? Okay, Aranya Vihari Prabhu, I am unmuting you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you so much for the wonderful explanation. I mentioned my question on chat also. So regarding Varnashram, Prabhupada many a times used terminology as Daivi Varnashram. Mm-hmm. So if you could throw some light on, you already have explained in details, but the point what you were saying, that was Prabhupada really contradicting or not, so that you explained now. So Daivi Varnashram system means following the Varnashram within the purview of Krishna consciousness. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding of Daivi Varnashram is that actually if you see the history of this word Daivi Varnashram, You will never find this word Devi Varnashram in any of the Vedic texts. Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, nowhere you will find this word Devi Varnashram, because this was a word coined by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Okay.
He defined Devi Varnashram as against the Asuri Varnashram. So there is no Devi Varnashram, Asuri Varnashram. Actually, there is only Varnashram. So Varnashram is based on worship of Vishnu. That is the very essence of practice of Varnashram, Vishnu worship. So, but over a period of time, people just started taking, practicing the Patan Patan, Yajan Yajan, Dana Pratigraha, the occupational duties, they took it very seriously. But Vishnu worship was gradually replaced by Devata worship and other such things. So, the actual active principle, that the essential active principle of that Varnashram system, which is worship of Vishnu, was lost. So, that is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls as the Asuri Varnashram, where the because Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Deva Asurastad Viparyaya, Vishnu Puran says. So who is a Deva or a divine person? One who is a Vishnu Bhakta is a divine person. And who is an Asura? One who does not worship Vishnu is an Asura. So Asuri Varnashram is that in which the Varnashram duties are diligently followed, but there is no worship of Vishnu. And as against what is Devi Varnashram, where the Varnashram duties may be followed, but there it is based on worship of Vishnu. So when Prabhupada wanted to establish Devi Varnashram meaning, I mean, as I discussed, one of the three, you know, it could be for outsiders to as a stepping stone to come towards Krishna consciousness, or it could even be accept the essential occupations, which are non-Ugra Karma occupations that are recommended in the scriptures, and incorporate it in, devotees should incorporate those occupations in their own lives, so that they can avoid the Ugra Karma lifestyle, which is not very conducive for progressing in Krishna consciousness. So, in the mood of Anukulyasya Sankalpo, accept their occupations. That could also be one of the meanings of Devi Varnashram. That's my understanding. Okay, I think he lost Aranya Vihari Prabhu. Okay, any other? Okay, Srinivas Prasad Prabhu, I'm unmuting you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam Prabhuji.
Dandavat Prabhu, yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, my question is there are a lot of devotees who are coming to ISKCON, and as you said that basically one who comes with this pure devotional service are very rare. Mm-hmm. So, even we also, I'm talking about myself, I also didn't come to ISKCON with this desire that I want to pursue pure devotional service. But when I come to Krishna consciousness, then I come to know about pure devotional service. Mm-hmm. So, what is the chance of a person now who has come to Krishna consciousness and he is not able to follow pure devotional service till end of his life?
What is next life he will continue, na?
So in this lifetime, till the time he does not attain to pure devotional service, so there is no chance that he can.
No, next life he can continue. Krishna will facilitate it. If in this life he does not accumulate sufficient Agyat Sukriti that he can start pure devotional service, whatever Agyat Sukriti he has accumulated in this life, Krishna will allow him to continue from where he left in his next life.
That is the only mother way.
There is no loss. Whatever Sukriti is gained, that is always there. That will not be lost. And whenever, till it matures in the next life also, it will continue.
And there is no mother, that is one aspect. And the other aspect is that there is no chance that one can perfect his life without attaining to the pure devotional service.
Yeah, if he has a compromised understanding of perfection of life, let's say if he thinks that merging in the Brahma Jyoti, or you, like that some kind of a compromised understanding of perfection, then he can understand that compromised understanding of perfection without coming to pure devotional service. But the real understanding of perfection, that he cannot attain without coming to pure devotional service, which is Krishna Prem, he cannot attain.
Yes, yes. So for that, he has to come to that level.
Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Prabhu. Any last comment? I know it's already 9 o'clock. If there are no further questions, we will end our discussion here. So thank you very much for your patient listening. So hoping to have your association next Tuesday also. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami Pad Ki Jai, Srimana Siksha Ki Jai. So thank you very much. We will end our discussion here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.